Hello, this is Michael Steed from Kaplan Financial, and I'm here today to talk about the budget 2008. And there it was, Alistair Darling's first budget speech delivered to an expectant House of Commons on the 12th of March. At just under 1 hour, his speech had many of the hallmarks of his predecessor. Much self-congratulation and rather too many references not to prudence but to stability, a new comfort word perhaps in the rather stormy seas of the current economic environment. As we've come to expect, there was little detail in the speech. The devil, predictably, was in the detail, and at over 100 budget notices, that's 270 pages, this had to be the largest post-budget paper avalanche yet. In terms of personal tax, the income tax package had already been announced in the 2007 budget. For income tax, the three-band system that we've grown to love is to go from April 2008. Instead of 10, 22 and 40% as the basic model, we're to have a two-band model, 20% and 40%. That means that the 10% starting rate will be abolished. This is for salaries, self-employed profits and profits from land and buildings. But for savings, the three-band system will be retained with a 10% starting rate, a 20% rate and a top 40% rate. Dividends too are unaffected. The rate will be 10% for basic rate taxpayers and 32.5% for higher rate taxpayers, and dividend income will remain as top slice of income. There are some complications here though, and I'll cover those in the Spring Tax Update series and weave them in with the new, equally exciting national insurance rules. Personal allowances are also rising, but for most taxpayers only by £210 from £5,225 in 2007-08 to £5,435 in 2008-09. Pensioners, though, do rather better. Their increases are more substantial. For a person aged 65 to 74, the basic age allowance will rise from £7,550 to £9,030. And for persons aged 75 and over, the rise will be from £7,690 to £9,180. Remember, though, that these age allowances are means-tested. There is an income limit for the two age allowances, and in 2008-09, that has been set at £21,800. So, a pensioner with total income not exceeding this number, £21,800, will be entitled to the whole age allowance. However, if their total income exceeds that amount, the age allowance is reduced by £1 for every £2 of income above the limit. But the age allowance can never fall below the basic personal allowance, so rich pensioners will not be penalised. So under these new rules, there are clearly going to be winners and losers. Those on very low incomes will surely lose with a loss of the 10% band, but the tax credit systems, remember, nothing really to do with tax, will kick in to relieve, at least in part, some of the loss. There are many parts of the detail in this budget that have already been announced, as I said, corporation tax, for example. In the 2007 budget, Gordon Brown announced that the main rate of CT would drop from 30% to 28%, following sustained criticism from business leaders that the taxation burden in the UK was too high compared with our major competitors. The 2008 budget has confirmed that drop. As far as most of our clients are concerned, the 2007 announcement in respect of small companies were also confirmed, with the small companies rate progressively rising. In finance year 2008, it will be 21%, and in finance year 2009, it will be 22%. Remember, this rise was in part an attack on Arctic Systems type tax planning for small family businesses, and more on that in just a few minutes. One thing, however, was new, and that was a simplification of what are known as the associated company rules. And what are these? Well, supposing Mrs. Singh wholly owns two small companies, perhaps each doing different things. These companies are associated for corporation tax purposes, and therefore the tax bands, that is the rate at which profits are taxed, are divided by 2, because in total there are 2 associated companies. So for both companies, instead of the small companies rate, which remember will be 21% from this April, going up to 300,000, it will only go up to 150,000. But supposing Mrs. Singh had one company and Mr. Singh had the other, would this make any difference? Before the budget, yes, these are associated companies, even if the two businesses have no contact. But what is new is that from the 1st of April 2008, it would be only necessary to take into account the interest of an individual's business partners where, and I quote, relevant tax planning arrangements, unquote, have been entered into. These are defined as arrangements which involve both an individual and his or her business partner and secure a tax advantage by virtue of the company's eligibility for the small company's rate. We need to look at the detail, and that will obviously come out in the finance bill, but at the moment that looks fairly positive. We don't have to worry perhaps so much about husbands and wives having separate companies and the effect that that would have on each other's corporation tax. In respect of capital allowances, many of the changes were also announced in the 2007 budget. As far as many AAT businesses are concerned, the biggest change is that from April 2008, most first-year allowances are going, and they will be replaced by the new Annual Investment Allowance, or AIA. This will allow the first 50,000 of capital expenditure on plant and machinery each year to be totally relieved from either income tax or corporation tax. Note, please, that it's expenditure on plant and machinery. So although this would include a van, it wouldn't include a car. Having said that the new 100% write-off doesn't apply to cars, it does continue, however, to be available for cars with very low CO2 emissions. When I've spoken to AAT audiences over the last couple of years, I've stressed that the 100% first-year allowance on these very low CO2 emission cars, such as the Ford car or the Smart car, and remember these are those cars with emissions not exceeding 120 grams per kilometre, would qualify up to March 2008, but I was uncertain on the basis of no firm information on what would happen after that date. Well, now we know. The Chancellor announced in the 2008 budget that 100% first-year allowance would continue to be available for very low CO2 emission cars for at least up to March 2013, but he has lowered the bar. A car will only be classed as low CO2 emitting if emissions are not more than 110 grams per kilometre, and the limit, remember, is currently 120 grams per kilometre. It's worth adding too that a lot of the green measures announced in the last few years are staying, not surprisingly. And these too attract 100% first-year allowance. They include expenditure on water-saving technology, such as efficient taps, showers, toilets, etc., and energy-saving technology, and that includes solar panels and wind turbines. I'd like to turn now, if I may, to business tax. Of course, Arctic Systems has dominated the landscape for the last 4 years, culminating in the historic taxpayer win for Mr. and Mrs. Jones in the House of Lords in July 2007. The government's swift knee-jerk reaction announced that there would now be new legislation to combat husband and wife, and now, of course, civil partner, income-splitting arrangements, and these were duly announced in the PBR, the pre-budget report, in October 2007. When we saw the proposed legislation earlier this year, it was much, much wider than the husband and wife and civil partners. It applied to any business with any relationship between individuals who owned that business. The proposal was that any individual who, in effect, gifts business income to any other individual would be re-taxed on that gifted income, but only where a tax advantage arose. So, a higher rate taxpayer, gifting to a basic rate taxpayer would be caught, but a basic rate taxpayer gifting to another basic rate taxpayer would not be caught because clearly there would be no tax advantage. The reaction to the proposed legislation, which was to come into force from the 6th of April 2008, was vociferous and extremely negative, and the Treasury was duly caught off guard. I'm delighted to report from the dispatch box that in the budget, the Chancellor announced that he's postponing the introduction of this income-splitting legislation at least until April 2009 to allow more consultation on the issue. At last, some 11th-hour common sense, and we can hopefully look forward to some sensible dialogue between the Treasury and the profession about the way forward. We all want a holistic approach to small business taxation reform, not a sticking plaster. In the meantime, it's business as usual. In theory, a non-working husband can own 99% of the company and his working wife 1% if they so chose. And certainly in the next year, there's no problem about 50-50 splits in family businesses where there is a non-working or lesser working spouse that has an ownership in that business. While we're still talking about business tax, there was one other item of interest in the budget. Budget Notice 63 had something about what is called sideways loss relief. Sideways loss relief, remember, is where you have a trade and you incur a loss in that trade. The sideways loss relief in the Income Tax Act 2007 allows an individual to set off that loss against other income in the same year. And clearly that's tax efficient. But the Chancellor announced in the budget that there would be a restriction to loss relief where individuals carry on a trade but spend an average of less than 10 hours a week on the commercial activities of that trade. So we're talking about micro part-time businesses then. From the 12th of March 2008, no set-off of losses will be available if there are, I love this phrase, tax planning schemes in place. And in any event, the losses will be subject to an annual limit of £25,000. Slight sigh of relief there then, because this is probably okay for most of our clients. It means that small-scale hobby traders who might incur a loss will not be affected by these measures. And finally on business tax, for VAT, the good news for small businesses is that the registration threshold rises from £64,000 to £67,000 from the 1st of April 2008, and therefore the deregistration threshold, which is always set, remember, at £2,000 under the registration threshold, will therefore be set at £65,000. The raising of the threshold is always good news for small businesses, and many AAT members will welcome it. A quick word about employee benefits. The Chancellor made announcements about both van and cars, and the cars one just worth perhaps a moment or two. Where a car is made available for an employee's private use, clearly a taxable benefit arises under the Income Tax Earning and Pensions Act, known as ITEPA or ITEPA. Company car tax is calculated by applying a percentage to the list price of the car, and the percentage is related to the CO2 emissions of the car, and ranges from 15% to 35% in 1% jumps. Most diesel cars attract a 3% supplement on petrol cars, but these are also capped at 35%. A new lower rate of 10% for cars with CO2 emissions of 120 grams per kilometre or less, that's 13% for most diesels, will come into effect from the 6th of April 2008. And what the Chancellor has done is to set the CO2 emissions, which determine the lowest 15% rate for most cars, at 135 grams per kilometre for 2008-09 and the same for 2009-10. But he's slowly turning the screws on the manufacturer. So from 2010-11, the lowest threshold will be reduced by 5 grams to 130. And we'll see how the manufacturers respond to that point. Let's turn now to the capital gains aspect of the Chancellor's budget. This story has been a bit of a disaster for Alistair Darling's reputation, together with the non-dom issue, the non-domiciles, which I'll cover in a minute. In the pre-budget report, you'll recall that Alistair Darling announced that the CGT system would face major overhaul from April 2008. The placing of net gains, in effect, as a top slice of income, is to go. All gains after the annual exemption, which of course remains, will be taxed at a flat rate of 18% regardless of income. So the richest of the poorest will pay the same flat rate. But the bad news is that indexation allowance and taper relief will go. So this is a genuine simplification. But hold on, things are not always as they seem, and here's a good example. Whilst for a higher rate taxpayer, the rate will drop from 40% to 18%, the loss of the indexation allowance and taper relief will have an opposite effect, which in some cases will more than offset the drop in the rate from 40 to 18. Let me give you an example. Let's say that somebody inherits a house from mum in the early 1980s and has let it ever since and now wants to sell it. As a general reckoning, the indexation allowance causes a gain to halve over the period that it was in currency. That's from 1982 to 1998. So, a house that has rocketed in value since the 1980s, and most houses have, these measures would result, with the loss of the indexation allowance, in substantial extra taxation. And again, we'll look at the detail in the spring tax series. The move was, of course, political. It was a knee-jerk reaction to the 2007 summer stories of private equity paying less tax than a cleaner, and the politics of envy duly kicked in. But the storm of protest that followed the announcements did cause the government to rethink, and a very recent new entrepreneurs' relief was announced that would help entrepreneurs, but they are subject to some important conditions. The relief basically provides that there will be a return to an effective rate of 10% of capital gains tax on the disposal of an interest in a business, assets used in a ceased business, and some company shares. But this U-turn, which in effect re-establishes the old 10% rate for entrepreneurs, only applies to gains up to 1 million, and this is over the lifetime of the entrepreneur. This relief is therefore worth £80,000 in total, the difference between 1 million at 18% and 1 million at 10%. And it will no doubt help retiring small business owners, but it will in no way help serial entrepreneurs. Dragon's Den, look out. Note too that the relief will only apply to owners who have owned the business for 12 months. And, in principle, will apply as much to incorporation of a business as to the winding up of a business. Let's now look at the very topical non-dom issues. First, let's remind ourselves of the term. A person who is resident in the UK will be taxed on their worldwide income and gains. They will, however, be able to use their personal allowances and their CGT annual exemptions. So that's a resident. A person who is ordinarily resident will be taxed on their worldwide gains. That, remember, is a second hook for CGT, and these folk can also use their CGT annual exemption. A person who is domiciled will be taxed on their worldwide estate on death, and so that's an IHT issue. But there's a hole in this. People who are either not ordinarily residents, or perhaps more commonly non-domiciled, will be taxed, of course, on their UK income, but only on their foreign income and gains to the extent that these are, keyword here, remitted to the UK. If they are not remitted, they will not be taxed. So, who are these people? Obviously, the super rich that get into the headlines, like Mohammed Al-Fayed and Roman Abramovich. But there are also lots of bankers, and indeed other migrant workers who perhaps stay for a few years and then generally depart. The non-doms also include many long-term residents of the UK who are not yet caught by the tax rule that automatically makes them domiciled for tax purposes if they've been in the UK for 17 out of the last 20 years. And so generally these are referred to as res non-doms. They are resident in most tax years and they are non-domiciled. There was predictably a knee-jerk reaction against the super-rich following the summer 2007 stories, and in the October pre-budget report, the Chancellor imposed a £30,000 annual levy on these non-doms who remain in the UK for 7 years or more. There was predictably an outcry. What was not immediately obvious at the time was that in these proposals, all non-doms who wish to use the remittance basis and who have unremitted income of more than, at the time, £1,000 would lose their personal allowances and their capital gains tax annual exemption, regardless of whether they'd been in the UK for 7 years or not. Now, that places the net much wider. Perhaps the Chancellor hadn't thought the thing through, but there have to be hundreds and thousands of long-term visitors who are not going to be aware that they are now going to lose their personal allowances in April of 2008. Imagine, for example, an agricultural business that employs lots of migrant workers. How are they to know whether to apply free pay to their PAYE deductions or not? That doesn't look very easy. In the budget, the Chancellor announced that the £1,000 threshold, below which they simply wouldn't be interested in these folk, would double to £2,000, and it's certainly true that that will take some out of the net. But I don't think it's going to take anything like enough of these people outside the net. We all know of clients and indeed friends who are going to be in this box, and we need to give them some proper advice. So who is going to be affected then? Obviously the super rich who will just pay up. The middling bankers will either pay or go, but it's the hundreds and thousands of workers, both short and long term, who live and work in the UK, but have some income and perhaps some gains arising abroad, are going to be affected. It looks to me to be nearly impossible to properly audit, and it's likely that there will be large-scale inadvertent non-compliance. And it remains to be seen how that one will pan out. As far as inheritance tax is concerned, and we've mentioned that a couple of times, the October PBR announced that the legislation will be introduced into the 2008 finance bill to allow any unused nil rate band on a person's death to be transferred to the estate of their spouse or civil partner who dies on or after the 9th of October 2007. What the budget has done is to confirm this, but it's also announced some consequential changes to the CGT legislation and those concern valuation. They're actually quite complicated and we'll need to see what the finance bill looks like before we can decide whether those affect us or not. And as we come down to the end of this podcast, there is at least one bit of good news in respect of gift aid. Because of the drop in the basic rate of income tax in April 2008 means that charities will suffer as the reclaimable income tax will consequently drop. So the Chancellor announced some transitional measures to ensure that charities don't unduly suffer. So on the 12th of March he announced that there would be a transitional 3-year relief where there will be a 2% supplement in the amount paid to charities. Well, that's as much as I've got to say on this. I look forward to seeing you on the Tax Update series. And that's me, Michael Steve from Kaplan Financial, signing off. Cheerio. See you soon.